The opinions and statements expressed in the following program do not necessarily reflect those of WWDB, its staff, or management.
We can't take this madness any longer. Eye for an eye, bomb for a bomb. How can prayers for peace be answered while the battle rages on? No more, no, no more nightmares. No more, no, no more bomb scares. For the sake of the ones we love, shalom, shalom.
Good morning, good morning, good morning. Boker tov, guten morgen, and however one likes to think of the beginning of the day. Unfortunately, many of the beginnings of the day lately, when I get on the news from Israel, I always hope to see something good happening. And unfortunately, that is the case. I have a friend who said to me, we keep getting these reports about four Israelis have died. He's been to Israel several times. And he says, what's not being reported? He was a psychologist with the IDF. He's a rabbi and a psychologist. And he said he's been visiting with wounded women as well as men and their families. And we really don't know how many young people have been maimed for life. So it's not only the people who are dying, but the people who are being wounded. And hopefully, Baruch Hashem, that this will stop sometime soon. Anyhow, I'm really, really thrilled to have a long-time friend of mine with us this morning, Martin Raffel. We have known each other for over 40 years, actually. Martin was not my immediate successor, but one step removed at the American Jewish Committee. We both worked with somebody who really was one of the giants of the community relations field. Some of you may know the name Murray Friedman, who unfortunately, passed away a number of years ago at a relatively young age. Martin went on. He was the American Jewish Congress director. He actually was a vice president of the Reconstructionist Rabbinical College, although I don't know that Martin is a Reconstructionist. But then he went to New York, where he was the senior vice president for Jewish Council and Public Affairs. Martin was the Israeli, or the Israel Chacham, although Martin did live in Israel. But Martin was somebody who, no matter where we were coming from, the community relations professionals, we always looked for Martin, not only for his expertise, but his fairness. Martin was never an ideologue. And we knew what Martin was going to tell us, his understanding of what was happening in Israel, was always professional, very well studied. I mean, Marty really knew what he was talking about. And even if we disagreed with him, we knew we had to pay attention with the advice and the information we were getting from him. And then I convinced Martin, I don't know, it took much convincing, to join me on the board. Obviously, I'm wearing my hat, Democratic Jewish Outreach. And as I tell you every week, please support the JOP. You can get online and see how you could do that, because we do financially support the Democratic candidates, but we work with them to help them better understand the agenda of the Jewish community. And Martin's a very, very important part of that, particularly in Bucks County, where he now lives. I always begin this show by asking my guests just to tell us a little bit about what brought them to Jewish advocacy, to spending a lot of time with their time on behalf of the concern and the interest of the Jewish community. And Martin is somebody who's certainly devoted over half his life, as have I guess, to representing what we think is in the interest of not only of our community. That's what community relations is about, is really, reaching out to everybody and trying to make the world a better place, but certainly advocating on behalf of Jewish interests, which certainly include Israel. So Martin, I know you are a born and bred Pennsylvanian, right? Were you born in Harrisburg?
My parents were born in Harrisburg. My grandparents arrived in Harrisburg I think in 1907 or 1908. So I am a Harrisburg thoroughbred and a Pennsylvania true and true. You said you always want to know what the news is from Israel every morning. Well, today, and I'll get to, you know, why I do what I do. But today's news is that the Israeli Supreme Court, in a unanimous ruling, determined that the Haredi, the ultra-religious men, are required to serve on an equal basis with the rest of Israeli society, something that the ultra-religious community in Israel has fought, you know, for forever.
Has there been a reaction yet from the Haredi community?
I'm sure I haven't seen it, but I can only imagine that it's not a positive reaction. And whether it creates sufficient tensions within the government coalition to cause the government coalition to fall apart and to lead to new elections remains to be seen. This coalition, the Netanyahu-led coalition, depends on the Haredi parties and the far-right parties of Ben-Gvir and Smotrich. So if any of those parties drop out of the coalition, they only have a 4-seat majority over the required 60, then it would inevitably lead to early elections. It's too soon to tell how this will play out. Netanyahu, I'm sure, will do everything possible to salvage his coalition, but it remains to be seen. So back to your original question, and, you know, I'll do this on one leg. It's kind of my life story on one foot. I look at my adult life, my post-Harrisburg life, in three phases. The first started in 1968 when I went to Israel as a student for a junior year abroad, and I was taken by the spirit of the Israelis, the environment, the post Six-Day War, 1967 war, joy that the Israelis felt about what appeared to them to be a miraculous victory over a combination of Arab armies. I was leaving an America that was being driven apart by the Vietnam War. The students on campus where I was in Lancaster at Franklin and Marshall, as elsewhere in the country, were very upset with U.S. policy in Southeast Asia. And I went to Israel and people were very upbeat and positive, and it took me in. And so for the next 10 years, I lived in Israel. I studied in Israel. I went to law school in Israel. I became a member of the Israel Bar with the idea that I was going to settle in Israel and make my life there. I returned for a variety of reasons, don't need to go into, but I returned in 1978. And then after a year working in a law firm, I started my, what you described as the Jewish community relations career, first in Philadelphia and then in New York. You mentioned the Jewish Council for Public Affairs, then when I first started, known as NACRAC, the National Jewish Community Relations Advisory Council, which is, you can see why we changed the name to Jewish Council for Public Affairs. And the community relations field, Bert, that you and I worked in for so many years, so people understand, it is kind of the external relations arm of the organized Jewish community. There were organizations, federations, and others that looked inward in the Jewish community to take care of the health, the education, the well-being of the Jewish community itself. And then the JCRCs, organizations like American Jewish Committee, ADL, and others, and my agency for many years, the JCPA, we were the ones that interacted in the broader community, the non-Jewish community, with political leaders, the media, Christian and Muslim influentials, civic groups of various kinds, around a shared agenda, a shared set of values and policy objectives. And we were at the table
I think the listeners ought to know that local organizations in just about any significant city around the United States had bigger or smaller community relations councils. I mean, the Philadelphia one was one of the largest, and I like to think one of the best in the nation. because I did eventually go on to become the executive director there. But small cities might have, you know, one person who is the community and does exactly what you're talking about, builds relationships with the non-Jewish community. I remember somebody once said to me, why does the JCRC spend so much time with non-Jews? And I said, it's because there are a lot more non-Jews than there are Jews. And if we want to live in a safe, happy America, we need to do everything we can to build those relationships. Mm-hmm. And you, with a national agency, most certainly help strengthen those relationships.
Right. Well, it was, I mean, we were an umbrella organization, and we worked in, we didn't dictate to the local JCRC, certainly, but we involved the local JCRCs in policymaking and strategizing. So it was not, we weren't kind of parachuting in and telling JCRCs what to do. It was a collective decision on what issues we needed to work on and how we needed to work on them. And so and by the way, the Philadelphia JCRC, we would always say that was the flagship JCRC. And Bert, you know, part of that certainly can be attributed to the work that you did there for many years. And the third phase, and I worked at the JCPA, which is a 501c3 organization. It had to be strictly nonpartisan. I retired there in 2014. This summer, it'll be 10 years. I continued to consult for a number of years after that. But then in 2016, my nonpartisan life changed with the election of Donald Trump as president. And we were living in New Jersey at the time. We were in a state that seemed to be safe as far as the national election was concerned. I got involved in some congressional campaigns, but I also, you know, worked to a certain extent for Hillary Clinton. Unfortunately, we weren't successful. And then we moved to Pennsylvania in Bucks County in early 2020. And I found myself, you know, in maybe the most important state in national electoral politics in Bucks County, which is considered one of the really important counties in Pennsylvania politics. So, and I was no longer shackled by my 501c3 status at the JCPA. So I decided I was going to throw myself into partisan electoral politics. And of course, Bert, you know, knowing that while I don't know a lot about many things, I know very little about most things. The one thing I do know is Israel and the Jewish community. So you steered me in the direction of Democratic Jewish Outreach Pennsylvania. And so I've been.
And you've forgiven me, yes.
I've served on the board now for the last 4.5 years, and I've kind of become, I would say, the go-to person at DGOP. And then I like to think not just DGOP, but the Jews of Pennsylvania can look to DGOP and to me as a resource on Israel in a partisan way. I mean, there are, you know, Philadelphia still has a JCRC, Pittsburgh has a JCRC. They work on a communal basis on Israel and many other issues. But for those who want a democratic partisan spin on the Israel issue, I've kind of become the go-to person for that. And so there are these three phases, my Israel living in Israel phase, my working in the community relations / public affairs field, and now in the last 8 years or so, I've been doing partisan democratic politics.
Let me ask you the question I think that we all ask. Are you very, very pessimistic? Are you a little bit optimistic? I mean, again, you know, when I was talking about reading, I mean, even though I've been retired for many years, people still think I know something about Israel. I mean, I've been to Israel, had to work, and just, I mean, my honeymoon was spent in Israel. I was raised in a very Zionist family. And so I pay it still a lot of attention, although I must tell you, my ability to read modern Hebrew is the metza, as we say in Yiddish. But people ask me all the time, what do I think is going to happen? Am I hopeful? I don't know what to say, quite frankly. I can't say I'm very hopeful. I must admit that there, particularly after the attack of the world, the kibbutzim and the moshavim, I spent probably every other day crying. But I can't say, I sometimes don't still on the verge of tears when I read a story about one of the hostages or the return of a body or something. What is your sensibility about what you think might happen with the, you know, in the next, let's say, 6 months? I know that may be an unfair question.
There's going to be a presidential election in the United States in the next 6 months. That's something I can predict with some certainty.
Can I quote you?
Yeah, you can quote me. I'm going out on a limb here. And I think it's you know, we always say, oh, this is the most important election of our lifetimes. You know, this one could be, you know, it could be true this time. But I think you're asking me about Israel. And I, you know, it's I try not to get caught up in optimism, pessimism, realism, you know, mood as much as possible. I remember when our trips to Israel, we would meet with many people, one of them, Tal Becker. I don't know if you know that name. Tal has recently been appointed, I think, is in a very high position at the Hartman Institute in Jerusalem. He was a legal advisor in the foreign ministry. He was the one that gave the opening statement to the International Court of Justice to defending Israel against South Africa's genocide charge. It was a spectacular opening statement that he delivered. So he used to say, and we, you know, we would ask a similar question of Tal, you know, so what do you think? You know, what's going to happen? Is it good? Is it bad? So he would say, look, he said, I get up every morning and I say to myself, what can I do today to make some positive contribution to Israel's peace and security? You know, not worrying too much about, you know, what his feelings are. He has feelings, obviously, but he's concretely, what could he do to advance the cause of Israeli security and peace between Israel and its neighbors? That's kind of been my North Star. Mm-hmm. And that was and still is my North Star, because I, even though I've taken a kind of a shift off to in a partisan direction, I still feel a part of the Jewish community. Very much so. And I look at these issues not just through a Democratic Party lens, but also through a Jewish communal lens. You said I'm a long time and not an old friend. Well, I'm going to be 75 next month, so maybe I qualify.
I'm going to be 81 next week.
Okay, so you know we're you know you talked about Yiddish is an expression out the cocker. You know we're among the you know the senior elders of the community.
You are still, as Murray used to call us, a bunchik.
Yeah, you know, the youth guard of AJC. So I have a long history of my connection to Israel and the Jewish community, and I lived in Israel in the 1970s, and I still hold on to certain experiences. I hold on to being in Israel when Anwar Sadat landed in 1977, just years after the Yom Kippur War, where if you would ask the Israelis in the couple of years after 1973 in the Yom Kippur War, would there ever be peace between Israel and its Arab neighbors and with Egypt that launched that devastating surprise attack on the holiest Jewish day, they would have laughed in your face.
I
was in a room with Israelis, and everyone was crying when Sadat emerged from the plane. Mm-hmm. And Israelis spontaneously lined the route between the airport in Lod, which is now Ben Gurion Airport, and Jerusalem, waving Egyptian flags. And it was clear to me then, you know, that Menachem Begin, who had declared that he was going to retire to the settlement in the Sinai called Yamit, that they would never give back the strategically important Sinai. As soon as I saw Sadat come off the plane and make his way to Jerusalem, I knew the Israelis were going to withdraw from the Sinai because they weren't going to miss an opportunity to have real peace with an Arab leader who they genuinely felt was ready to have a full peace.
Martin, I was invited, you know, my friend, I think you know Marwan Karidi. Marwan and I have been friends for a long time, and he and I sometimes still talk when we were, and then I want you to talk about politics a little bit, but when we were at Governor Shapiro's party, we were reminiscing when we were on the White House lawn together and how we hugged. Because we really thought, you know, and I remember
in 93, the Oslo Accords.
Yep. And I remember Marwan said to me, you know what, Bert, we now can admit to everybody that we're good friends. Because I would sometimes hear, oh, what are you doing with Marwan Karidi? And once he took a telephone call, when they answered the telephone, Jewish Community Relations Council, the person hung up because they thought they had gotten the wrong number. So I think, you know, what you're saying about Israel was translated, you know, obviously a smaller level to those of us who are advocates. Talk a little bit, because
I will. But one last word: I'm not Pollyannish. I know that Israel 2024 is not Israel 1977. I know it's a different Israel. The politics are different. There's been a lot of bloodshed between then and now. People are declaring that the two-state solution or outcome is finished. It's dead. There's no way to come back to it. I wouldn't write anything off. The Middle East can be a very surprising place.
Martin, I always say there's a reason that the Israeli national anthem translates as hope, because without hope. But unfortunately, the show's only a half hour, though I am going to invite you back as things change. But why do you feel so strongly, and as I know you do, that the re-election of Joe Biden and the Democratic Senate and Congress are in Israel, aside from it being in the best interest of America, are in Israel's best interest? Because, I mean, you know as well as I do, we're hearing from a lot of people who say, well, I don't know, Israel is not so popular in the Democratic Party anymore, and people are saying worse things. Yeah. So that's not true, I know. But
Yeah, it's not. And there is a wing of the Democratic Party which is hostile to Israel, but it's a relatively marginal wing of the party. And it's been denounced by party leadership, unlike what happens on the other side of the aisle. Look, I want a president who believes in Israel. In what we go back to Yiddish, in his kishkes, in his gut. Yes. Joe Biden is not a political supporter of Israel. He's a genuine supporter of Israel that comes out of over a half a century of believing in the importance of protecting the state of Israel
against enemies. You know what, Martin, I say, and understands the Jewish people in a way that very few American politicians have, I believe.
Yeah. He's up against a Republican opponent who, you can't find a more transactional politician in America who only does what is in his particular interest. So if Israel is in his interest to support Israel, if it's his interest to support Israel, he'll support Israel. If one day he decides Israel is no longer in his political interest, he wouldn't hesitate for a second to throw Israel under the bus. So I want someone who can be depended on. Look at what he and the rest of the MAGA base have done with Ukraine. That's a warning sign for Israelis.
That it is.
If you're willing to not defend a democracy who's fighting for its life against a brutal dictator like Putin
and a communist dictatorship, which had always been the enemy of everything America, and Putin has brought back some of the worst aspects of the old Soviet system. And if we don't understand that, we are fools.
This is not the Republican Party anymore. It's the MAGA Party. And we need to understand the difference. Look, I was never a Republican, but I didn't, you know, I wouldn't have lost sleep if Mitt Romney or John McCain had been elected president. I would have disagreed with policies, but they were American patriots. They understood the need to respect the Constitution. They believed in truth. They believed in science. And in pluralism and democracy, all the kind of hallmarks of our American way of life. We're dealing with a totally different party, which has become a kind of a MAGA cult to one individual who is unhinged. And so it's, you ask me why I'm, you know, I get up now in the morning and I say, what can I do to elect Biden and Democrats up and down the ballot? It's because I don't want MAGA to rule my life and the life of my family.
Yes. And Martin, and that is, look, we both have grandchildren. And I know we've talked about it. We think about what kind of America do we want our grandchildren to live in? And and that's one of the things I think that informs our PAC, that, you know, when we have conversations, you know, the people who are involved with JCPA, we often talk about, you know, what are we, because we do tend to be a little bit older, you know, what kind of America do we want our offspring, particularly Jewish community, not only to live in, and a Jewish community that is living in a country where Donald Trump and his ilk are making decisions terrifies me. And
yeah, a guy who can host anti-Semites and Holocaust revisionist deniers in for lunch, not apologize for it, and then tell us that we should be ashamed for voting for Democrats. You know, it's a shame on us if we buy into that crap.
But you know, Martin, I am going to certainly want to have you back, because the time sure flies, as they say, and it is an evolving situation. There will be good news. Hopefully, I don't know anybody in the Jewish community who likes to see these pictures of dead Arab children. And even people who are on the right wing who may say, well, they started it. I don't know too many people who tell about the damage that is done.
That's not a Jewish impulse.
That's exactly right, Martin. Yeah. That's exactly right. Well, look, again, thank you. I really enjoy working with you. And I know we both feel good about our involvement with DJOP, with the Democratic Jewish Outreach. And again, I urge people to help us with it. They say, remember, a checkup and a check. A check, certainly, but a checkup to make sure we're doing everything we can to talk positively about Democratic candidates. And,
I'll end with Yiddish, since you started. Sei gesund, Bert. Be well.
And you as well, and the mishpacha.